A growl rumbles through his chest. Goosebumps erupt all over my body. He watches me for a moment, his eyes glittering, his chest rapidly rising and falling with his breath. Finally, he makes a decision on whatever argument is going on inside his head. He commands, "Don't move." He sits up, crosses to the door, closes and locks it, and then turns back to me. He pulls his shirt off over his head and drops it to the floor, so he's standing there bare-chested and barefoot, wearing only the sweats with the big pole tenting the front, staring at me with wild eyes and a hard jaw, his pulse throbbing hard in his neck. His gaze on mine, he crosses back to the bed and slowly crawls up the mattress. My heart beats so frantically I can't catch my breath. When his head is level with my stomach, he stops. His hands are planted on either side of my hips, his arms braced so all the muscles bulge. He moistens his lips. He leans his weight onto one hand, and with the other, brushes his thumb in the damp seam between my legs. When I make a soft cry, he shushes me. I bite my lip. Every part of me is trembling. My nipples and pussy are aching. I've never felt such profound physical need. Watching my face, Brody slowly strokes his thumb up and down, rubbing my pussy through the fabric that covers it. The pressure is light. Too light. I flex my hips up, wanting more.
"Move again and I'll stop,"
he warns, in this dark, dominant voice that gives me another rash of goosebumps. I fall so still I might as well be playing dead. If I could somehow stop breathing, I would. Still lightly stroking me, he lowers his head and presses a gentle kiss to my belly. His lips part. He traces his tongue around my belly button and then dips it in. The barest moan breaks from my lips. Right through the fabric, he lightly pinches my clit. I jerk, gasping. He growls,
"No moving, no noise, no exceptions. Understood."
Sweet Ryan Gosling on a unicorn, dominant Brody is sexy as fuck. I don't dare answer. I close my eyes and lie there, incandescent with desire, wishing I believed in God so I could pray to him to help me be still and quiet without being a complete hypocrite. Brody praises me with a murmured,
"Good girl."
His mouth is hot on my skin, soft and wet. He kisses and licks me, nips me with just enough pressure to sting, all over my belly and across to my hip, taking his time, making a meal of it. He adjusts his weight so he's balanced on his knees, and then inches the waistband of my sweats down, agonizingly slowly, pulling it past my hips until he stops with a low chuckle that sends a tingle right through me.
"No panties,
Sue me. That thought is tossed out the window when Brody blows a breath of air over my exposed flesh. I catch myself before the groan leaves my lips and lie there with my hands clenched to fists, bunched in his t-shirt over my head, every nerve in my body singing,
"Look at this beautiful pussy. Look at you. Fuck."
His words are whispered and reverent, like a prayer. With infinite gentleness, almost chastely, lips closed like you would kiss someone's cheeks, Brody kisses me between my legs. I'm going to burst into flames. I'm going to be one of those bizarre cases of spontaneous human combustion and explode in a giant ball of fire, all from the touch of this man's lips on my skin. Inhaling, he nuzzles the fold between my thigh and pussy. He softly groans. The sound is so carnal, so purely sexual and masculine, my clit throbs in response. His tongue, oh God, his tongue, hot and soft, seeking there. The shudder that runs through me is involuntary. I couldn't stop it if I tried.
Easy, sweetheart, he whispers. You're doing so good.
I swallow a whimper. He cups my ass and squeezes it. He drags my sweats farther down, his fingers digging into my flesh like he loves the feel of it, like he wants to bruise me, leave his mark. He bites my hip, then my upper thigh, and I begin to shake. Not tremble, shake.
Oh, she likes it,
he breathes.
She likes my love bites. Will she like it when I do this?
His teeth scrape over my clit. I almost pass out. His groan vibrates through me.
Your pussy is throbbing, Grace.
More softly to himself.
Fucking throbbing.
With a soft moan, he lifts me to his face with both hands under my ass and shoves his tongue deep inside me. I bite my lip so hard I taste blood. He feasts on me, licking and sucking and fucking me with his tongue. I try desperately to stay still, to stay silent, to do nothing that would make him stop, until I open my eyes and see him reaching into his sweats. His face buried between my thighs, making animal noises low in his throat, Rhodey pulls out his beautiful stiff cock and starts to stroke it. I've done everything. I've seen everything. I've had so much sex in my life I could write the preeminent instruction manual on this subject. Yet I've never seen anything as downright sexy as this. As him, worshipping me with his mouth, helpless not to touch himself as he does it. His eyes drift open. Our gazes lock. Time slips away. Reason follows, and then there's only my heartbeat like the thunder in my ears and the smell of lemon furniture polish and sex in my nose and a hot wave of pleasure cresting over me, rising and rising and rising, burning my skin, expanding inside me until I'm sure I'll shatter into a million tiny pieces and disappear. My back bows from the bed.
Wait.
He commands hoarsely, breathing hard.
With me.
A sound, fractured and incoherent, escapes me.
With me, Grace, not before.
He growls, his erection jutting from his fist. He sees the yes in my eyes because he drops his head again. He sucks my clit into his mouth. He strokes his cock from base to tip, squeezing the head. Thumbing over the slit to spread the bead of moisture around, and then back down to the base. He watches me the whole time, his dark green eyes aflame with passion. The rhythm of his hand increases. He starts to rock into the pumps of his fist, his ass flexing, all the veins standing out on his arm. His eyes close. The stubble on his jaw scrapes my flesh, inflaming my already exquisitely sensitive pussy. I inhale a sharp breath through my nose, biting my tongue to keep from crying out. Then, shuddering and jerking, he moans into me, a deep guttural sound that I recognize at once. He's there. I close my eyes, spread my legs wider, and let go. My scream is long, loud, and wavering. I come and come and come, convulsing around his mouth, my thighs shaking, my neck arched, my fingernails digging into my palms, the world red and spinning under my eyelids. Brody! God! Brody! Pushing down, he flattens his hand over the center of my chest and keeps eating me as my orgasm rocks me. Keeps licking me even as he's bucking, his own orgasm tearing through him, his grunts of pleasure muffled in my sex. The best. The best. The best. Best, 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 best. One after another, wave after wave, pulses so violent I'm helpless to do anything but let them slam into me. Every muscle in my vagina contracts and releases, hard again and again. My clitoris is the center of the galaxy, a supernova exploding into space. My entire body is flushed with heat. My nipples tingle, as does every inch of my skin. The intensity of it all makes me lose my breath. Finally, I'm a noodle. A panting, sweating noodle, unsure whether I'm on the cusp of laughter or tears. I open my eyes. Brody is watching me, his eyes half-lidded, his mouth still buried in my flesh. His hand and cock are both glistening. So is his expensive silk duvet cover, and a good part of my abdomen and upper thighs. And he calls me slick? The man is a human fire hose. I dissolve into laughter. In a husky voice, Brody says, "That is so not the reaction I was hoping for." I laugh harder. Between gasps of air, I manage to say, You glazed me, and your hand, and the bed? Excuse me, comedian, but you glazed me. He lifts his head and smiles at me. His cheeks and chin are wet. I groan. Oh, my God, this is the least sexy after-sex conversation I've ever had. Brody turns his head and bites my thigh. Then he looks up at me, grinning. But the best, right? Because it's me, so, obviously. I try really hard not to laugh, only I fail spectacularly. This feeling of euphoria is new. Normally after sex, I'm jumping hurdles to get to the front door, but right now I'm floating somewhere way above cloud nine. And not to correct you or anything, because it's indelicate to correct a lady so soon after such an eardrum-shattering orgasm, but that wasn't sex. Well, it certainly wasn't a turnip. I told you, Grace, that was just foreplay. Foreplay my ass. That was the sun and the stars and the entire known universe. Brody's chuckle is low and satisfied. Now that's a compliment. Much better, slick. I sigh. My entire body feels like jello. You deserve it, Kong. That was spectacular. He crawls up to me, takes my face in his hands, and gives me a deep, heartfelt kiss. You're spectacular, he whispers, gazing down at me. And you taste even better. I'm already addicted. He kisses me again. Maybe you just have an addictive personality, I tease, loving his intensity, his playfulness, the rough edge in his voice and the happy light in his eyes. Loving all of this, the way he sounds and feels and touches me, how it all just seems so right. No, he says seriously, looking into my eyes. It's because it's like someone asked me for a list of all the things that would make up my ideal woman and then created you in a lab for me. It's because you're funny and smart and sexy and independent and strong and can have any man you want, but you look at me like I'm a Christmas present, like I'm a kept promise, like I'm your favorite song. His voice drops. It's because you're perfect, but you make me feel like I am. My throat closes. An invisible hand squeezes my chest. I stare into Brody's beautiful green eyes and think, oh. Oh. So this is what it's like. Instead of admitting I'm feeling emotional, I make a joke. I'm not perfect. His brows lift. My left foot is half a size bigger than my right. A grin spreads over his face. Also, one of my ears is slightly higher than the other. You can only tell when I wear sunglasses, but still, my ears aren't level. Brody kisses the tip of my nose, my forehead, both my cheeks.
I've been telling you this, sweetheart. You're hideous.
I'm also covered in, I glance down at my stomach. Rhodey follows my gaze.
Oh. Right.
He pauses a moment and then says,
Would it be gross to tell you that I have this really primal urge to smear it all over you and not let you take a shower for days?
I laugh. Yes, that would be gross. Caveman. He glances up at me and grins.
You bring out the Neanderthal in me, witch face.
He kisses me quickly, then pops up from the bed.
Stay there for a second. Help is on the way.
He disappears into the bathroom. After running a washcloth under the faucet and squeezing it out, he returns to me with it and a hand towel. I start to sit up, but he barks,
No!
He waves his hand, indicating I should stay as I am. I settle back against the pillows. You're incredibly bossy, you know that?
Don't act like you don't like it,
he murmurs, running the washcloth over my skin. He cleans me gently and diligently, smiling this hilariously smug smile the entire time. Then he dries me with the hand towel, pulls my sweats up to my waist, and unties the t-shirt from around my wrists. He helps me sit up, helps me put the shirt on, and then tackles me, taking us both back down to the mattress. Hey!
Hugs,
he says, his words muffled against my neck.
You need hugs, remember?
He squeezes his arms around me, curls his legs around me, and engulfs me. He's hugging me with his entire body. I close my eyes and snuggle into him, as close as I can get. His heart thuds loud and strong beneath my cheek. He's warm and heavy, gently kissing my neck and shoulder, sighing quietly as if he's feeling the same things I am. Contented. Euphoric. Joyful. Home. God, I think, drifting off to sleep. Maybe I was wrong about you after all.
18.
I awaken in stages, first aware of birds chirping somewhere outside, and then the delicious scent of baking bread. My body feels light as if it's floating. So does my spirit when I see how the sun has changed direction, slanting low through the windows in the west. It's late afternoon. I've been asleep for hours. I didn't have bad dreams. When I lift my head and look around, I'm alone. I yawn, sit up, stretch my arms overhead, and catch sight of the folded note on lined yellow paper on the pillow next to me. Smiling, I unfold it and read. Most hideous female who ever lived. Watching you sleep is like watching one of those foreign art house movies that win all the awards for cinematography and production design because they're so ravishingly beautiful and moving, even though no one has any idea what they're actually about. If that makes me sound like I've ingested some incredibly potent drugs, it's because I have. You. I'm high on you. I know you know that's the title of a Survivor song, but for the sake of romance, we'll both pretend we don't. I'm working on some better material. These things take a minute. You were sleeping so soundly I didn't want to wake you. Also, my dick decided it was time to start throwing his weight around again, so I had to leave before he could bully me into sneaking in a few rubs against your criminally sexy bottom. Because, hello, gross creeper. You see, chivalry isn't dead. On a more serious note, I really, really hope you don't wake up feeling any kind of regret or ickiness about what happened, because it was hands down the most incredible experience I've had as a human since I was born. Also because you feeling bad about it would make me want to kill myself. So, no pressure. Not liking your ugly mug at all. Brody. P.S. Dude, get a nose job. Do you even own a mirror? P.P.S. I think you said my name in your sleep.
Hashtag giddy. PPPS. I looked at your feet. You were totally lying. They're like two sizes different, Sasquatch. When I set the note back on the nightstand, I'm smiling so widely it hurts. I can't remember the last time I felt this. Excited? No. Giddy. Brody found the perfect word. I'm as giddy as a schoolgirl with her first crush. Even though my condo blew up this morning. Even though tomorrow morning I might have no idea who or where I am. Even though everything. Wow. This Oxycontin is some powerful shit. Energized, I fling back the light blanket I'm covered with and leap from the bed. I use the bathroom, splash water on my face, comb my fingers through my tangled hair, and smile at myself in the mirror. Well, hello, gorgeous, I say to my reflection. Don't you look like a million bucks? I definitely feel like I do. I'm a homeless millionaire. I'd better not repeat that to Brody, or he'll start calling me Slumdog. I make my way from his room, down the hallway, and into the kitchen, following that amazing smell of baking bread. Magda is at the big gourmet stove with pot holders, pulling a golden brown loaf from the oven. Hi, Magda. Do you need help with that? Her back to me, she cackles and replies in Spanish. The day I need help with my cooking is the day I find a nice high ledge to jump from. She waves a hand toward the open patio doors. Go on. He's in the guest house, probably making a mess. Okay, thanks. She turns and peers at me. Then she nods as if satisfied and turns back to the stove. I don't even want to ask. Barefoot, I cross the patio and then head across the huge lawn toward the structure behind the stand of giant palm trees. It's about a 5-minute walk. The sun is warm on my shoulders. The ocean breeze plays with my hair. I wonder if the house has a name, as many of these grand homes do. If not, I'm going to suggest to Brody that he christen it Shangri-La, because it's truly an earthly paradise. When I round the thicket of palms, I come to an abrupt halt, staring. Then I start to laugh. The guest house, like the main house, is something straight out of Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. It's a sprawling Mediterranean with saffron-hued walls and a red-tiled roof, surrounded with lush landscaped gardens, mature trees, a koi pond with a waterfall, and a wraparound balcony that looks straight out to the sea. A kidney-shaped pool with a black rock bottom is shaded by palm trees. A fountain in the shape of a mermaid rising from a wave burbles in the middle of the lawn. A private driveway lined with blooming jasmine bushes winds out of sight over a low hill at the far end of the yard. It's magical. It's utterly charming. And for tonight at least, it's mine. Admiring the general splendor, I walk slowly toward the front door. It's half wood, half beveled glass, and it's open. I go inside and find myself standing in a cool, quiet entryway. Mirrors and polished marble glisten everywhere. Hello? Brody? His faint call of, "In here," comes from the back of the house. I move slowly through the rooms, touching a sculpture here, admiring an oil painting there, wondering what it must be like to have this kind of money. My parents were solidly middle class, by no means wealthy. I know this not because I remember my upbringing, but because of the meeting I had with their attorney a week after their deaths, wherein he informed me I was lucky they both had life insurance policies. Lucky. That's not the word I would have chosen to describe my situation. I find Brody in the master bedroom, arranging birds of paradise in a vase on the glass table by the open windows. He turns to me, smiling. You're up. I am, And you're arranging flowers?
He glances at the flowers and the clippers on the table like he's just been caught doing something naughty. He shoves his hands into the front pockets of his jeans, shrugs, and looks bashfully at his feet.
Yeah. I thought you might, you know, like some flowers in your room. I cut them from the yard.
My heart melts into a puddle. When I don't say anything, Brody looks up at me. He misinterprets the expression on my face because his brow crinkles.
Oh, are you allergic? Shit, I'm sorry. I never asked.
I cross to him and throw my arms around his neck. I love flowers, I say hoarsely, standing on my toes to hug him. And that you thought I might want some in my room. That is so sweet. You're so sweet, Brody. And silly, and romantic, and funny, and completely unexpected. I have to stop because my voice is getting high. My throat is too tight to continue. Brody winds his arms around my back and pulls me against his body so there are no gaps between us. He nuzzles my neck, inhaling into my hair.
And Manly. Don't forget Manly.
Right. My bad. Manly should have been the first thing I said.
He chuckles.
I mean, I know it goes without saying since you're already pregnant with octuplets.
Octuplets? I pull back and smile up at him. Pushing a strand of hair off my cheek, he grins.
Oh yeah, baby. I've got your bun factory working overtime. I've got some powerful spooge in these loins.
I wrinkle my nose.
Spooge? Ew. Oh, I'm sorry. The word offends you, but having it sprayed all over your body doesn't?
Fortunately for you, pal. He beams up at me.
True. How about if I try another word? Like, jizz. Ugh. Spunk.
More ugh.
Man milk. Baby batter. Homemade yogurt.
You're disturbed. Stop talking before I take back all that nice stuff I just said about you.
Just trying to show off my awesome vocabulary, sweetheart.
Oh, yes. Your intellect is truly dizzying, my friend.
Aha. You just quoted the man in black from The Princess Bride, didn't you?
I don't know. Did I? I ask, testing him. He nods.
But you got it wrong. The actual quote is, truly, you have a dizzying intellect.
We grin at each other like a pair of lunatics. Then Brody takes my face in his hands and gives me a soft kiss.
So.
He sweeps his thumbs over my cheekbones, looking at me from beneath his lashes.
How are you feeling? About, you know.
Your jizz? I tease. He kisses the tip of my nose.
Seriously, are we good? You're not regretting it, are you?
This man is impossibly sweet. Wonderful, thoughtful, and sweet. He's worried that I'll regret it when it was me throwing myself at him. I rest my cheek on his chest and sigh in happiness. Frankly, I'm only regretting that you wouldn't give me access to your man-milk maker itself.
About that.
I look up at him sharply. Uh-oh. That doesn't sound good.
Brody unwinds my arms from around his waist. He leads me by the hand to the bed, a massive four-post affair with enough pillows to start a wholesale pillow outlet. We sit on the end, facing each other.
So here's the deal,
he says, looking at our hands, our fingers threaded together.
I know you just broke up with Marcus a few days ago.
He glances up at me for confirmation. When I nod, he looks back at our hands.
And I also know you're sort of a serial dater.
My brows shoot up. If you're about to slut-shame me, Princess, I'm about to give you a black eye. Brody sits up ramrod straight, his eyes wide.
No, God no, I'd never do that. I'm totally guilty of the same thing.
When I narrow my eyes at him, he slaps a hand over his mouth.
Not guilty. I didn't mean it like that. I only meant that I sleep around a lot, too.
He winces.
That so didn't come out right.
I fold my arms over my chest. If you dare ask me how many men I've slept with, I'll cut a bitch. He groans and scrubs his hands over his face.
I'm fucking this up. Just hear me out. I have a point.
I can hardly wait, I say dryly. I'm sure your enormous vocabulary will be a big help. He blows out a breath and then, as if he's gathered his courage, looks me square in the eyes.
I think we shouldn't have sex for a month.
To say I'm stunned would be an epic understatement. I stare at him, waiting for an explanation that makes any kind of sense. When he just sits there gazing at me with the earnestness of a labradoodle, I demand, please tell me you're not a virgin.
Of course not.
He laughs, but his laughter dies as quickly as it appeared, and he looks horrified.
Oh, God, do I seem like one? Like inexperienced in bed?
Honestly? His face pales. He nods. That thing you call foreplay was the best sex I've ever had. He sags with relief.
Jesus. Fuck. You scared the hell out of me.
Are you Amish? He makes a face.
Do you see me driving a horse and buggy and churning my own butter?
Then why are you saying we shouldn't have sex for 30 days?
Because I like you, he answers simply. I like you. A lot.
We stare at each other. Then I say, okay, I get it. You're respecting me. You're showing me respect. Right?
Right.
Respect noted. Now I think we should bang. He makes another face.
Bang? And you have a problem with my vocabulary? You sound like a teenage boy.
A terrible thought hits me. I cover my mouth with my hands. Brody asks,
what?
I whisper, do you have herpes? Do you need time for the sores to clear up? He looks at the ceiling and sighs.
Grace, no, I do not have herpes. Or any other STD, thank you very much.
Out of options for this ridiculous conversation, and at my wit's end with how to get him to change his mind, I throw my hands in the air.
I haven't gone without sex for a month since I was 18 years old.
He grins at me.
Trollop. Knew it.
Can't you find some other way to respect me that doesn't involve denying me my favorite thing in the world? He cocks his head.
Sex is your favorite thing in the world?
Now, that sounded bad. I try to backtrack, only it gets worse. Dick is my favorite thing in the world. Brody's grin reappears.
Can I just take a moment here to say that you're my dream woman?
I pinch the bridge of my nose between two fingers. This isn't going in the direction I'd hoped.
Seriously, the fact that those words would even leave your mouth makes me so happy you don't even know.
Brody.
Nope.
Nope what?
Nope. We're not having sex for a month, and we're not negotiating. I told you before, I want to get to know you before we do it.
May I remind you, Kong, we already did it?
Not all the way,
he says, sounding very reasonable.
There was no penetration, no outie in the innie, so technically, we didn't do it. Why are you looking at me like that?
I'm just wondering what planet you lived on before you came to Earth. He pulls me onto his lap and kisses my cheek.
Uranus.
I dissolve into laughter. I collapse against his chest and laugh until I'm hoarse, and then I laugh some more. Brody falls back onto the bed, taking me with him. He rolls on top of me. Then, bastard, he starts to tickle me. No, I scream, writhing helplessly. No tickling. I hate tickling.
Say we're not having sex for a month and I'll stop, he says, digging his fingers into my ribs.
That's blackmail. He wiggles his fingers into my belly. I scream again, trying to roll out from under him, but he's too heavy.
Say it, Slick, or you get the tickle treatment forever.
I'm going to kill you. Wiggling fingers poke into my side. Okay, I give. Uncle, no sex for a month. Smiling, his hair falling into his eyes, Brody gazes down at me.
Deal. The clock starts now. 1 month, no boning.
I ask breathlessly, but we can still do the foreplay thingy, right? He purses his lips like he's thinking, and I groan, Brody. He grins, only kidding.
Yes, we can still do the foreplay thingy. I'm not a total masochist.
No, you're a total sadist.
Speaking of which,
he wraps a hand firmly around my wrist and presses it to the bed. Ducking his head, he whispers into my ear,
You like being restrained, don't you?
His voice has that dark, dominant tone that makes my pulse quicken. Do you want total honesty here?
Yes,
he answers instantly. Like radical honesty?
Yes, that's exactly what I want from you from now on. Radical honesty. Go.
I've always been the one doing the restraining. Brody lifts his head and considers me with his brows pulled together.
You mean like you like to be on top or something?
No, Brody. I like to be the top. Understanding crosses his face. His smile comes on slow and sultry.
So you're not only a wanton little trollop, you're a wanton little dominatrix trollop.
It's not like I'm dressing up in latex corsets and beating anybody with a riding crop. I just like being the one in control, sexually and otherwise. I hesitate for only a second before deciding our new policy of radical honesty should be honored. I mean, I did, up to now, before you. But now I think losing control might be even more exciting, because I think I might be able to trust you to catch me when I fall. He examines me in silence, his eyes burning with intensity. Then he says quietly,
You have no idea how good that makes me feel.
My heartbeat goes haywire.
You have no idea how good you make me feel. But if I'm wrong about you catching me, I'll sick Marcus on you.
Brody pretends to be shot in the heart with an arrow and flops onto his back, clutching his chest. I jump on top of him and pepper kisses all over his face as he makes a dramatic show of expiring. You're a terrible actor, I tell him. It's a good thing you went into music. He rolls atop me again and commences with more tickle torture. Luckily, it doesn't last long, because the sound of an old-fashioned car horn pulls us apart. I ask, Is that coming from your butt?
Yep. Incoming text.
From his back pocket, he pulls out his cell phone. He looks at the screen and then at me.
The cavalry's here. It's Nico and Kat.
I sigh. So the first meeting of the Mutual Admiration Society comes to an end. Bummer. Brody rolls off of me, pops up from the bed, takes my hands and pulls me up. He squeezes my hands and grins at me.
Yeah, but we're gonna have meetings every day for the next month, so don't sweat it, Slick.
Following behind him, I let him lead me by the hand from the room. And then we're going to have daily meetings of the Horizontal Mambo Society. I feel his husky chuckle all the way to my toes.
Daily? If I know you at all, it's gonna be hourly.
My smile is wide and happy. Damn straight. Better get your beauty rest this month, because at the end of next month, you're going to be chapped dehydrated and totally exhausted. Looking at me over his shoulder, he laughs.
I can hardly wait.
I say dryly, that makes two of us. 19. The first thing Kat does when she sees me is throw her arms around me and bursts into tears, complete with hysterical sobbing. Nico, Barney, and Brody stand in the foyer of the main house watching us. Not even 3 seconds have passed since we let them in the front door, and I've got Ms. Drama Queen 2016 having a breakdown all over my Neil Diamond t-shirt. I haven't yet told Brody I'm claiming it for my own, but I've literally had some of the happiest hours in recent memory in this stupid old shirt, and there's no way I'm parting with it now. Over Kat's shoulder, I look at Nico with my brows raised. He shrugs.
She's worried about you.
Barney says,
we all are. You doing okay, angel face?
Beside him, Brody stiffens. Barney has about 50 pounds on Brody, is trained in martial arts, used to be in the military before he worked as a bodyguard, and is armed with a handgun. Yet I have no doubt Brody would go toe-to-toe with Barney if the man so much as looks at me sideways again. In the name of radical honesty, we'll have a talk about that later. Jealousy is a deal-breaker for me. I'm good, Barney, thank you. I smile at Brody. I'm being very well taken care of. As if a faucet had been turned off, Kat stops crying. She pulls away and looks at me, then at Brody, who's no longer bristling but grinning, then back at me.
You're good?
I nod. She wipes her face with her fingers.
Are you sure?
I give her hand a squeeze. Honestly, Kat, I'm really lucky I wasn't home. All that stuff that blew up is just that. Stuff. It can be replaced. She groans.
But your beautiful clothes, all your jewelry.
A spike of pain pierces my heart. I don't really care about the clothes, and the insurance will pay for the jewelry, but there were a few things that can never be replaced. Like the engagement ring my grandfather gave to my grandmother. Like the small gold locket my mother used to wear around her neck that had a picture of me as a baby inside. Like my parents' wedding rings, returned to me in a little plastic bag from the morgue. My smile fades as my stomach sours.
Well, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Brody steps up beside me. He clasps an arm around my shoulder, pulls me against him, and kisses me on the temple. He gazes into my eyes.
And you're a tough cookie, Slick,
he murmurs, looking at me as if there's no one else in the room.
You're gonna make it through this just fine.
His lips curve upward.
Plus, you've got the octuplets to focus on now, so there's really no time for feeling bad.
Kat barks.
What? Octuplets? What did you just say?
Brody grins at her.
Oh, Grace didn't tell you yet? She's pregnant with...
I elbow him in the side.
Ow!
Judging by the look of distress on Kat's face, I should have elbowed him harder. I have a feeling her emotional outburst when she came in was more to do with her than me. He's joking, Kat, I reassure her. Nobody's pregnant. I shoot Brody a sharp sideways glare. Nobody's getting pregnant either. Brody mock pouts.
Is this your subtle way of telling me you don't want kids? Because my mother just told me today that she's ready to be a grandma again, and I was thinking after our 30 days are up, we could...
One more word. I interrupt him calmly. And you won't be able to get anyone pregnant because you'll be missing the proper equipment. All this talk of pregnancy is making Kat ghostly pale. I'm not the only one who notices. Nico takes her by the arm, pulls her toward him so her back is against his chest, wraps his arms around her, ducks his head, and whispers something into her ear. Eyes closed, lips pressed together, she nods.
Shit.
Barney drawls,
30 days? What's that all about?
He and Brody lock eyes.
Double shit.
Before Brody can answer, I jump in. So Brody said you guys were going to put together a little care package for me, Kat. Clothes or whatever?
Oh, yes. Sorry, sweetie.
Kat sends me a shaky smile.
I've got bags and bags of stuff for you in the car. Chloe and I tore through our closets. The only thing we didn't give you was underwear, for obvious reasons.
Brody quips, she won't be needing underwear anyway. He and Barney are still glaring at each other.
Wonderful. Looks like we'll be having that cockfight after all.
Nico, ever the conciliator, says to Barney,
hey man, would you get the bags from the car for Grace, please?
Sure,
he says, holding Brody's gaze.
Anything for Grace.
For several long moments, he doesn't move. He simply stands there, giving Brody a level, challenging look. But then finally he turns on his heel and stalks out the door.
Okay, says Kat, watching him go. That was awkward.
Irritated, Brody asks Nico,
you gonna talk to him about his attitude, brah?
His attitude,
repeats Nico.
You know that shit's a two-way street, right?
That dude is way out of line.
That dude has saved your ass more times than I can count.
He's your fucking employee, man.
And has been a friend for years. Not only mine, but yours, too.
Yeah, he has. And now he's acting like a dick, and I'm not gonna put up with it. Would you if the shoe were on the other foot?
Nico's gaze cuts to me.
You on board with this, Grace? You think I should have a talk with Barney? Tell him to back off?
No. I take a step away from Brody, cross my arms over my chest, and meet his eyes. And since you brought it up, here's some radical honesty for you, Brody. Jealousy is petty, immature, and has no place in a healthy relationship. I won't tolerate it. Either we trust each other or we don't. If we do, it doesn't matter how many other people flirt with us. If we don't, well, we might as well just quit while we're ahead and save ourselves the aggravation. Brody looks as if I've slapped him.
Be right back,
he says, and bolts out the front door after Barney. Watching him tear off across the driveway, Nico mutters,
what the hell have you done to him?
Kat peers out the open door.
Apparently, she's hypnotized him with her magical vagina. I've never seen anyone do such a 180.
I don't want to stand there and gape at him in the doorway, so I take a few steps back and ask, what do you mean? What's he doing? After a while, Nico chuckles.
Looks like he's eating a big-ass bucket of crow.
Kat, a little help here. She smiles.
Brody and Barney are standing next to the Escalade. Barney has his arms crossed over his chest and his legs spread, in badass mode, and Brody is doing all the talking.
She pauses.
Now Barney is nodding his head.
Another pause.
Now they're shaking hands.
She laughs.
Now they're doing that macho guy hug it out thing, lots of back thumping and play shoving.
She looks at me, grinning.
Looks like your boy just went and apologized.
He can't be for real. He has to be too good to be true. No one is this perfect.
Nico?
He glances at me. You know Brody better than anyone, right?
Yeah, like a brother.
I need to ask you something. Nico lifts his brows.
Shoot.
Is he a good guy? I mean, everyone has faults, but bottom line, is he good?
Nico grins, showcasing his dimples. His blue eyes twinkle with mischief.
Why? You like him or something?
I exhale a shaky breath. Please don't fuck with me. I need an honest, unbiased opinion.
Kat and Nico stare at me with new expressions, like I'm someone they've never met before, some body snatcher who's murdered the real Grace and is now walking around wearing her skin.
Nico says softly,
You really do like him.
Chewing my lip, I nod. Unsmiling, Nico nods too.
Okay, then I'll tell you the truth, Grace. Yes, he's a good guy. He's reliable and honest, he's considerate and unselfish, and he's generous to a fault. He's not one to wear his heart on his sleeve, and I know sometimes things bother him that he'd never admit to, but he's definitely good.
His gaze grows penetrating.
And since we're truth-telling, as far as I'm concerned, he's the one who needs to worry about getting hurt in this scenario.
Nico, snaps Kat. That's not fair. But I'm not insulted in the least. If I were looking at things from Nico's perspective, I'd think the same thing. Yes, it is, Kat. It's totally fair. If you judged things by my dating history, that is. My voice grows softer. But if you judged things by the way he makes me feel, you'd know you wouldn't have anything to worry about.
Nico doesn't look convinced. Yeah? So how does he make you feel?
It falls from my tongue without even a thought, as simple and true as an exhaled breath. Like everything bad that's happened to me was worth it because it was all leading up to him. After I speak those words, there's total stunned silence. Until a loud thunk comes from the doorway. When I see what made the sound, my heart stops. Barney stands there, two large suitcases clutched in his meaty fists. Brody is right behind him, staring at me with blazing eyes and two spots of color high on his cheeks. A large duffel bag sits at his feet where he dropped it.
He dropped it because he heard me.
For a second, I'm panicked. But then I decide, screw it. I'm already this far down the rabbit hole. Might as well go ahead and eat the cake.
Your timing's impeccable, Mr. Scott.
I say softly, meeting his eyes. His voice thick, he replies,
And thank fuck for that.
I glance at Barney. Did you two kiss and make up? He lifts a shoulder.
Hard to stay mad at a guy who says he's sorry 10 times in a row, and means it.
He purses his lips, adding,
Not sure he's good enough for you, though.
Brody rasps,
I'm definitely not. No one is. She's a fucking goddess.
The way he's looking at me definitely makes me feel like one. I bet if I concentrated, I could fly. Brody makes a beeline for me. When he's an arm's length away, he grabs me and throws his arms around me. He squeezes me so tight, it leaves me breathless. Into my ear, he whispers gruffly,
Goddamn, witch face. You sure know how to knock a guy off his feet. We'll be in the kitchen raiding your liquor cabinet,
says Nico with a chuckle.
Come on, baby. Barney.
Their footsteps recede. When we're alone, I say into Brody's neck,
Radical honesty?
Yes.
I lift my head and look into his blazing eyes. I'm totally going to use this to try to get you to have sex with me before 30 days. He bursts into laughter. And thank you for apologizing to Barney. I know he appreciated it. Smiling down at me with wonderful warmth, Brody cups my face in his hands.
I didn't do it for him, sunshine. You know I didn't do it for him.
When he kisses me, I'm smiling against his lips.
20. Brody. Kat, Nico, and Barney stay for about an hour. We talk, we drink, we hang out like we always have, but this time it's completely different, because this time I'm different. No one ever told me it could be like this. Like you finally understand who you are and why you're here, and all your broken pieces don't even matter because there's something so much more important to think about. Namely, doing everything in your power to make the goddess suddenly in your life feel as amazing as she is. And she is amazing. Way more than that. We've joked about my incredible vocabulary, but I don't think there's a word in any language that could accurately describe how balls-out fantastic this girl is. Not girl, woman. She's all woman, the kind who knows how to turn a boy into a man, and a man into a slave. Putty, that's what she's turned me into. Putty in the palms of her elegant, manicured hands. I'm sitting next to her at the kitchen table, listening to her talk, and marveling at how fucking smart she is. Seriously, she gives my brain a hard-on. I don't even know that was a thing. When Barney says, "You think AJ's okay, though?" Chloe seemed worried. My head snaps around. "AJ? What do you mean?" Kat fidgets in her chair. Tapping her nails against her glass of wine, she says, "When we went by Chloe and AJ's to pick up the clothes, AJ was sleeping." Grace repeats, "Sleeping? What's wrong with that?" Kat and Nico share a look. "Chloe said he had another headache and had to lie down." A chill runs down my spine. Another headache? Oh, fuck. "Yeah. We managed to pry it out of her that over the past 2 weeks he's been getting them every few days. This one was so bad he took 2 Tylenol with codeine." Kat pauses. "And when that didn't work, he took 2 more. We stare at each other in silence. Grace absently reaches for my hand. I squeeze it between both of mine as she sits forward in her chair. "Has he gone to the doctor?" Kat shakes her head. "He won't go." "What?" shout Grace and I, horrified. Nico finishes his whiskey in one swallow and then sets the glass down with a shake of his head. "Chloe didn't confirm this, and I didn't want to get into it with her today, but I think it has to do with what the doctors told AJ to anticipate after his brain surgery." Grace's brow furrows. "You mean these headaches are normal?" For a moment, Nico stares down at his glass. When he raises his gaze to Grace's, all the tiny hairs on the back of my neck stand on end. "I mean that if he started to get headaches, it was a symptom that the tumor had invaded the temporal lobe." Grace gasps. "No!" Nico nods. "They weren't able to get the whole tumor during his surgery, we know that. And with any remaining tumor tissue, there's always the possibility it will continue to grow. But he could do radiation, or chemo," interrupts Grace, distraught. "And kill healthy brain tissue as well as the tumor," says Nico gently. "With side effects ranging from memory loss, speech impairment, changes in judgment-making capability, even changes in personality." I'm feeling a little queasy. "Changes in personality? Like what?" Nico's somber gaze cuts to mine. "Primarily, aggressiveness." Grace covers her face with her hands. She whispers, "Oh, God, Chloe, the baby." "Yeah," sighs Nico, raking a hand through his hair. "But we don't know this for sure, right?" I ask, desperate for some kind of hope. "Not for sure, no. But I gotta be honest, man. AJ told me right after he came home from the hospital that he was living on borrowed time. He knew even though the surgery was successful at removing most of the tumor, it wasn't a home run, that most likely he'd only bought himself another few years. And he was determined those years would be good, not spent hooked up to machines or sick from chemo drugs. If the tumor's back, he's going to let it run its course and enjoy every last minute he can with his family." Grace slaps her hands on the table. Everyone jumps. "God damn it!" She jolts to her feet, knocking her chair back. She glares at us, each in turn. "We are not," she says, breathing heavily, "allowing him to give up." Wow, angry Grace is kind of terrifying. "I don't think we really have a choice. If this is AJ's decision, no," she says flatly, cutting me off. "This isn't only about him. This is about his family, too, and his friends and everyone who loves him. He can't just unilaterally decide he's not getting any more treatment without even finding out definitively what the problem is." "No," she says again, stiffening her back and squaring her shoulders. "That isn't happening." Nico leans back in his chair and folds his arms over his chest. It looks like he's trying not to smile. Kat is worrying her lower lip. Barney, meanwhile, is grinning up at Grace with this big, dumb smile like a happy farm animal. I'd like to kick his leg under the table, but Grace wants me to be mature and not jealous, so instead I briefly